Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 123 of Rain Delay Radio. I'm Patrick, and I am joined today by Kevin. Kevin, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing excellent, Patrick. Thank you so much for having me this fine evening. It's been a gorgeous day out here in the Midwest, and I'm excited to talk some baseball.
Yeah, me too, man. You know, it's been a good day here. I actually was at a baseball game today. I caught a Somerset Patriots game with some buddies, including one of the guys who's actually going to be in the segment we have later on in the show. He's a big A's fan, so I got him and another A's fan to come on and talk about the A's moving from Oakland to Las Vegas. It's a really fantastic interview we did. You know, we gave them a space to vent out their feelings on everything with the team and, you know, how things got to this point. It's actually really fantastic. Frack gives some good insight about, like, the inner workings with the A's and what's been going on there and what really all led up to this. So, yeah, Frack and Corey are on that.
The A's thing in general just hurts me because the A's and the age of the Brewers are so similar that I can't even imagine just, like, you know, that being taken away from me just in that instant. It's just mind-blowing.
But it's heartbreaking. Yeah. I do want to preface that nothing with the A's is final yet. We titled this the eulogy to the Oakland A's because, you know, it's very likely they are leaving, but nothing is final yet. There was a tweet that Jeff Passan put out on May 3rd that said, only 34 days remain in the Nevada legislature session. The assembly speaker stated, if something was going to happen, it really should have been in place last week. The A's deal to buy land for a potential Las Vegas stadium is dependent upon the passage of the $500 million tax package. You know, we did discuss this could be a possibility in the segment. I don't think we touched on it too heavy. So just note that, you know, even though we're having a eulogy for the Oakland A's, you know, nothing is still final. And, you know, maybe, you know, that 0.0001% chance that they get the Howard Terminal project going and actually stay. But, you know, more than likely they're heading to Vegas.
Right. And wouldn't it be great if the court of public opinion actually mattered in this particular circumstance? Oh, because then, of course, you know,
fantastic.
Right. Because everyone is just, you know, drawing these guys over the coals over this whole thing. But, you know, money talks.
That it does. So we're going to get into some news here. We're going to start off with two A's related pieces of news. The first, well, both are actually quite sad, honestly. They're pretty sad, but the first one is MLB lost a legend this week. Vida Blue, he passed away. Passing away at the age of 73, he passed away, I believe it was yesterday. This is getting recorded Sunday, so I think it was yesterday, or today he passed away, actually. It was today that he passed away. So earlier today, Vida Blue passed away. He was a former MVP, former Cy Young Award winner. He won 3 World Championships with the Oakland A's. Just an absolute legendary pitcher for them. You know, he had himself a really nice career. 209 career wins. Pretty kind of crazy that he's not in the Hall of Fame, especially when you've reached 200 wins. I mean, right. He had some rough years there, but, you know, that MVP season was insane. And not to mention, he was also a pretty decent hitter, too.
What's really cool about Vida Blue is that he joined the league when he was only 19 years old. So he's one of the Oakland A's, like, original stars when that, you know, organization came around. He, you know, won the MVP in 1971 at the time. He was the youngest ever to win in either league. He's absolutely a face of that organization. And it's, you know, it's a shame that he has passed.
I'm really, really sad. He's got a card in MLB The Show that's, like, one of my favorite cards to use. He's always been nasty to face in that game. So, very sad to hear about Vida passing away. Thoughts with his family. Now, getting into the next piece of A's news, I mean, it just continues to be a train wreck over there. You know, look at what we've had this year. They're moving to Vegas. We have possums in the clubhouse. And now we have Glenn Kuiper, the A's broadcaster, was suspended for the use of a slur on air while talking about the Negro League Museum. Now, I want to state that when he was talking about the Negro League Museum, he wasn't saying anything negative about it. It was all positive. It sounded like he had been pronouncing it this way his whole life. Maybe just based off on how he grew up or whatever. It didn't sound like there was any ill intent whatsoever with this. But, you know, obviously, court of public opinion will reign supreme. So he's currently indefinitely suspended. He did issue an apology. You know, the Negro Leagues put out a statement, you know, saying that they welcomed him with open arms to the museum, and that, you know, they too think it was a mistake. You know, a lot of people coming out saying, you know, it sounded like it was a mistake and not an actual thing, and, you know.
Yeah, so I listened to this clip, and I too am kind of on the same boat with everybody else on this one. I think it was a mistake. I think that he honestly, has, you know, deep rooted respect for the Negro League in general. And yeah. He, like, the director of that museum did come out and said he had spoken with Glenn Kuiper earlier that day when he was at the museum touring it, and you could see that there was a lot of respect for everything that was, you know, being held at that museum. So. I do think this will just be a blip in the radar, to be honest with you. And of course, when you have a 24/7 news cycle like we kind of have, these things get brought up, and it is an unfortunate situation. And you certainly never want that to be the case. But I do hope that we're able to move past this, and that everybody kind of learns that, you know, that word is never okay in any circumstance.
No, absolutely.
I do think that though, Mr. Kuiper will be back calling A's games.
Brennan situation, you know,
definitely not.
This is not that. This is, you know, but you know, you got to take it seriously. You never know, and you know, it should be taken seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they're making the right call in giving that suspension, and we're bringing light to the topic again, and as it should be, because it's never too late or too early to have that conversation. It's, you know, always the right time. So
yeah. So now let's get into the good news. Liam Hendricks is starting a rehab assignment.
All right.
He should be back possibly within a month. We don't know, but he's out there doing a rehab assignment, getting ready to join the White Sox. Just awesome that he's been able to overcome what he has. You know, I can't wait to see Liam back on the mound. I really fell in love with Liam Hendricks during the All-Star game when he was mic'd up. I thought that was incredible stuff.
It's a great story, right? Anytime that you have someone who can battle back against one of the most deadly things that we have out there. I mean, we talk about screw cancer all the time, but he was able to overcome and even threw a perfect inning in one of his rehab starts. So I think that's a great feel-good story for baseball in general, especially for Liam Hendricks. And I certainly can't wait for him to get his big ovation on the big stage when he comes back.
Definitely. And then, you know, this was a really, really light news week. So just some final pieces of news here. It's two series announcements. Dodgers Padres will open the 2024 season in South Korea. So that's exciting to look forward to.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really cool thing,
that,
right?
That South Korea is going to be passionate about baseball. Right. And these guys over there.
This is the whole thing, like the collective bargaining agreement between MLB owners and the players that ran from last year through 26 talks about a robust, you know, introduction of international play where the clubs will kind of, you know, they're going to do games or these tours over Mexico, Asia, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, London, Paris, et cetera. I think we just, you know, saw those games in Mexico City just recently happened, and we see some ones in London coming up in June. And I think it's fantastic for the game. We talked ad nauseum this spring in a good way about the WBC and how awesome that was for baseball. And this is just a continual, you know, hopefully a great piggyback off of some of those things. Baseball needs to continue to have this international feel to it. And these tours, these goodwill games, however you want to call them, even though they are counting for things, we see that in the NFL now, right? And so now we're starting to see it even more here in Major League Baseball. And I think it's great that we're opening. Didn't they announce that they're going to be opening up the series? Or is that just the April games are going to be out there? I'm not even sure.
It's going to open the season. They're going to open the season.
So opening day is going to be in South Korea.
Yep.
That's a huge deal. That's a major deal.
Massive. Well, that's like, you know, we had the first opening games of the season a few years ago. It was like the A's and Mariners in Tokyo, I believe it was.
That's right. I remember that. Yep.
Yep. I mean, that was cool. Like, I love it. I love that baseball is really growing again.
Right, and two huge West Coast teams with huge populations that are really, really, really diehard baseball fans. And like you said, it's just going to continue to bring eyeballs on the product in general. And those young people seeing this product over there are going to continue to want to play baseball growing up. And we have the future of the game, hopefully a little more secured after something like that.
Yeah. And then going off of that, the Astros and Rockies will play the 2024 Mexico City series. If you didn't watch the two games between the Padres and the Giants, they were just massive slugfests out there. I totally love baseball in Mexico City because of how insanely stupid the elevation is there. So the ball just flies out of the park. It's great. So now you get the Astros Rockies who are going to play there. I'm sure Phil's going to be excited about that to see Yordan just absolutely send a ball into orbit in Mexico City. I definitely want to see Yordan hit a ball into orbit in Mexico City.
I want to see the bat flip go into orbit personally.
Oh my gosh. I'm all for it. Let's get it going. So, yeah. Astros Rockies 2024 Mexico City series. Really exciting. Very cool. So yeah, that's all the news for this week. So we're getting into some highlights of this week because, you know, I figured it'd be cool to go over some highlights.
Oh, yeah. Now, there's some good discussion bits in here, some juicy tidbits.
You know, we're going to keep it short because our A segment's a little long, but some good stuff to talk about. First one, so we're going to start with the Rays. We're going to start with this first part with the Rays. Umpires forced Zach Eflin to remove his rubber wedding ring during a start. And they said if he didn't remove it, they were going to eject him. I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like the umps have been on a massive power trip this year. I feel like they haven't called a single good game this year that I've seen.
Absolutely. I think that there's a whole bunch of different reasons for this, whether it be the realization that with the new rule changes, the eyeballs are going to be on them, whether it was the fact that they had an overchange of 10 umps during the offseason into this season. Whatever it may be, there's definitely been a bigger microscope been placed on some of these umpires, and I feel like they're cracking a little bit under the pressure. We've seen more instances of this ump show than ever before. We have players that are getting tossed out of games for arguing with umpires that have never been tossed out of a game in their entire professional career. That happened to Willie Adames this past weekend. And you're just absolutely, to answer your question, I think it's going out of control a little bit, and these umpires need to get reeled in, but I'm not even sure if that's even possible because of the whole union and all the other things that go into that whole spiel.
Well, it was in LA, but Bryce Harper hit a double like the ninth inning and they refused to grant him time to put his elbow guard on. But keep in mind, this guy just had Tommy John surgery. Okay. You can't claim to care about player safety, but not grant that player like the extra 20 seconds of time to put an elbow brace on.
What the story goes with Philly then appealed directly to Manfred and MLB all the way to the top and said, hey, can you make an exception for this? And like, nah.
It's so ridiculous. It's like,
what, we're supposed to be championing player safety, and this is what you, for an extra what, 5 seconds? I don't want to make
this a crap on Manfred segment, but I'm gonna make this a crap on Manfred segment. Like, dude, this dude has ruined baseball. I was pro pitch clock at first,
right?
But I am so against not granting time to players to make sure they are protected on the bases.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think games are too quick that it's taking away from the ballpark experience. So, for example, if I want to get something to eat in Philly, at a Phillies game, I've got to show up to the ballpark when the gates open so I can get in there, get something to eat, and sit down and not miss any part of the game. Because if I get up to go get something during the game, I will miss at least 2 to 3 innings.
Yeah, I can't even imagine how it is at some of these bigger ballparks, like in Philly or like in LA, for example. Here in Milwaukee, we have, you know, a lot of different options, and it's not usually that full, so I can't speak to that as much. But that definitely is the general complaint. You stand up, and for whatever reason, and half of it is gone. But I do think that we're kind of moving away from the idea that we need to have some sort of an exception for these brand new rules that are being created. You can't just have this black and white, this is the way it's going to be because I said so on year one. Like, we're not willing to make those exceptions in these very specific circumstances, then what's the point? You can't talk about. So yeah, we could rant on this for hours. But I think we're both on the same page when it comes to this particular one with Bryce Harper. They should absolutely make an exception for him and for anybody else who has a legitimate medical concern when it comes to that.
Yeah, I just don't get what the umps are trying to do. They're trying to make everything about them. Pitches are getting called worse than ever.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's insane. Bonkers. Like, you don't want people to be robo-umpire, pro-robo-umps, but when you're calling pitches like that, like, yeah, I am absolutely pro-robot umpire. Like, please, give me.
And then when I get the scorecard that comes out the next day on Twitter that shows that I was right the entire game, that you were just, you know, giving two runs or whatever it is to the other team, it's just...
Yeah. So that's the umpire show in baseball. Sticking with the Rays, the Rays are becoming one of my favorite teams to watch this year.
Oh, absolutely. How can you not?
My gosh, man. They are showing a lot of attitude and spunk. Two cases this week. We saw Wander Franco toss a ball that he caught in the air to himself and then throw it to first to get an out. And then in a game against the Yankees this week, Randy Arozarena hit a huge home run, was running the bases, stops at third base in front of the Yankees dugout, crosses his arms and stares them down, and then finishes his trot. So then the Yankees responded by hitting him twice. I hate stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a lot to break. So here's what I'll start with. So Tampa's off to the best start since the 84 Tigers, right? So the Tigers started off year 27-5, and they went on to bash their way to a World Series that year. Now the Rays are 28-7, and they just took 2 of 3 from the Yankees, and the Rays are just looking like they are having more fun than anybody else in this entire league.
Dude,
if Wander Franco wants to toss the ball to himself before throwing out the Pirates while being up 6-1 in the seventh while on the way to sweeping them, more power to him. Yeah. Go for it. I don't care. I am not this old-headed baseball fan that says tradition is all everything. And the fact that the Yankees chose to retaliate by plunking him is just so over the top that you couldn't have a different set of baseball, morality when it comes to the teams, I think, as far as the way they play the game. And that's why one team is at the top and one team's at the bottom. Now, obviously, injuries, that's why the Yankees are doing as poorly as they are, but you can't take anything away from the Rays.
No.
They look phenomenal. They're doing it against good teams, and they want everyone to watch. Like,
they do.
Attendance is going through the roof in Tampa. Like, this team
and that ballpark's impossible to get to.
Absolutely. And it has a white stadium or a white roof for a baseball stadium. So white ball, white roof. Anyway, it's and we can get to it too, though. And then Baltimore is only 5.5 back, but that's another discussion for another thing. Either way. Do I love what Wander Franco is doing? Yes. Do I love what Randy Arozarena is doing? I love it. Give me more things that young players want to do, more things we can put on ESPN, more things we can put on our big news boards. And you talk about baseball one way or another, it's a good thing for the sport.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just stupid that the Yankees decide, and this is as someone that's kind of a Yankees fan, like those that don't know, my Yankees fandom was out of spite to a family member growing up as a kid. I've never been the biggest fan. I just did it out of spite because, he was a Red Sox fan, and I did it out of spite. So someone that just, doesn't really care for them as much anymore. Like, I think it's Bush League to try and hit them, and then you've got the Yankees bros, the big Yankee bro fans on Twitter defending it. Like, come on. Like, let players have fun. Like, when Tatis hit that grand slam and flipped the bat with the bases loaded, I thought that was sick. Like, I love that kind of stuff. Yeah. The Batista bat flip from a few years ago when he flipped it into oblivion. Like,
look,
if all four players having attitude. Right?
If you're playing for a team that after a month is literally leading all of Major League with 225 runs and allowing the fewest runs in all of Major Leagues with 110, they're whopping 71 homers while allowing the fewest at 23. Like, literally, they're the best in everything. They're the best in all the offensive categories. Dude, this team is insane.
They've taken my boy, Zach Eflin, and turned him into an ace. Like, he legitimately looks like an ace.
Yeah.
Like I think he had like a 2.25 ERA last I saw. Yeah, Zach Eflin, 5 games started, 4-0 with a 2.25 ERA, 31 strikeouts, 3 walks, and 28 innings pitched. Eflin has never been this good, and they have turned him into an ace. You've got Taj Bradley.
Yeah.
And this rotation, like, Drew Rasmussen.
Yep,
Drew Rasmussen. He looks like an ace. Shane McClanahan is going to become the best pitcher in the AL this year. Bank on it. Like, I'm all in on what the Rays are doing.
Yep.
And, like, the Phillies look terrible. They're probably not making the playoffs. I want the Rays to win the World Series this year. I'm all in on them winning the World Series this year if the Phillies don't get in.
Yep, I'm 100% with you.
Give me a Rays championship. That would be sick. Save baseball in Tampa.
Absolutely. You give me a small market baseball team like my, you know, Milwaukee Brewers, and they found a way to make it work. Like, come on. That's so inspirational for an organization like mine. It would be like, they did it. Why can't you? Like, you don't have to be the Padres and spend $1 billion. Like, just do it right. Build from within. Right.
Yeah.
You know, young guns, support them. Yeah.
So I'm all for what they're doing. Keep being cocky. Keep winning.
Now,
I think it's
now
great.
Granted, right, it's 162 game season. This is May 7th. We all understand that. But they are on pace to do something bonkers. Like, what, Mariners 2001 was 116 wins? Well, they got something to shoot for. And hopefully a little bit longer in the playoffs, too.
Yeah. So going off of that, we now get to Shohei Ohtani. He just became the second player ever to have 100 career home runs and 500 career strikeouts, joining the one and only Babe Ruth on that list. I mean, what really can you say about Shohei? He's just that guy. Like, he's probably winning MVP again this year.
Yeah. As many of our listeners know, Angels were just in Milwaukee recently, and I missed on seeing a Shohei start by one day. Basically, they had got a rain out in Boston. They had to readjust the starts. So he was originally slated to pitch in Milwaukee. And I went to all 3 games of that series. But watching him in person run the bases, the way he, you know, is at his presence at bats, that moonshot home run, I'm sure everyone's have seen the statistics, but his home run on the 3rd game of the series was twice as high as the average base homer this season. Yep. It missed hitting the roof by like 20 feet, and no one hits the roof in AmFam. Like, it's unheard of. I was sitting behind home plate up in like the middle of the park, and watching that ball go out, it just hung up there forever. It was one of the most unique home runs I've ever seen in person in my entire life. It was incredible. Like you said, what more can you say about that man?
Yeah.
He's magical.
It's incredible. And, you know, the Angels are only a game back in the NL West right now, which is currently led by the Texas Rangers. They're an incredible story as well. You know, just some real incredible teams that are in first place this year right now. Like, obviously, Dodgers, Atlanta, you know, that's not shocking. But you got the Pirates in first place in the NL Central. You got the Rays way ahead in first place in the East, and then the Orioles in second, and then Boston in third. You've got the Twins in first in the Central, and then you got Texas and Los Angeles like a game apart in the West. Now, what's interesting is that if the season ended today, all 3 wildcard teams would be from the AL East. Baltimore's 22-11, Boston's 21-14, Toronto's 20-14, and then the Yankees are 18-16. AL East is now AL Beast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every single team's over 500. It's bonkers.
Yeah.
And even the tear that we've been talking about with the Rays, like Baltimore, as I mentioned kind of earlier, they're only 5.5 games back. You would think that a team, you know, who started off the season 28-7 would be completely crushing it. But, yeah. I mean, 5.5 games. Anyway, Baltimore's fun. They've got a lot of young guns, and you want to see them also be successful, because Baltimore baseball is fun baseball.
Yeah, I'm going to try and get out to Camden Yards this year. I think on a weekend I'm going to try and get out there and see that. I know I'm going to be doing a Pirates game this year in Pittsburgh at some point, but definitely want to get out to Camden Yards and watch Adley play live.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine. I was lucky enough to go to Camden almost a decade ago, but to see some of these younger guys play when there's actually some buzz in the park, not just, you know, deadness. Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Be cool to see. So now we go on to the St. Louis Cardinals. Naeem, I'm sorry. I got to talk about them because this is bad. Like,
yeah.
What? They just ended an 8-game losing streak today.
And it took 3 home runs from Goldschmidt to do it.
Yeah, but they're currently 11-24. Now, here's a fun fact. The NL Central was on a combined 18-game losing streak on May 4th.
They sure were. It was pretty embarrassing.
It's pretty rough.
The Cubs were the one to break it. Yeah. Otherwise, they would have had another entire day of everyone losing.
Yeah. But, man, the Cardinals are just bad. Like, Arenado does not look like Nolan Arenado. Now, again, it's only May. We shouldn't be overreacting. But, like, looking at his baseball savant pages, dude, he looks hooked. Like, he's looks not lost. He's way out there in space.
Yep. It's it's very interesting. So, obviously, as a Brewers fan, it's great to pile on the Cardinals. Yeah. I wish that the Brewers have been paying a little bit better over the last 10 games for me to feel a little bit better about bashing the Cardinals last 10 games. But at least for their entire month of April has been absolutely brutal, to the point where we're seeing them do some pretty wild stuff. I mean, this whole Wilson Contreras thing is very interesting to me. You know, what was it, a couple of days ago when it was announced that they were going to be moving him over to DH, and possibly some outfield in favor of one Andrew Kisner. And basically, it comes down to he needs to know the expectations of what Cardinal catchers, you know, need to be all about, and whether he came in and just thought he could walk into that role and be Yadi's like just replacement without any sort of learning curve. And that's not the case because his offense hasn't been bad.
But he's never been an elite defensive catcher, though. That's the thing.
But, well, what has he done in April that's got him benched, though? Like, I want to talk to Naeem about this. Like yeah, what that's is what it? I wanna is know. It the pitchers that are going to their coaches and being like, dude, this guy isn't framing for me, or he isn't calling a good game, or his defense is subpar, so therefore, like, there's got to be something that those pitchers are uncomfortable doing with Wilson Contreras behind the backstop. Otherwise, why would they be making this move after 1 month? It doesn't make sense to me, especially with all the money they gave this guy.
You're paying this like, dude, like, they backed up a
truck to him, and now all of a sudden you're telling me he's going to DH and maybe outfield? Like, what in the damn hell did this dude do in 1 month? And to, like, you can't blame their record on Wilson Contreras. They have obviously problems. You talk about Arenado. Their starting pitching is atrocious. Like, they can't get out of their own way. They just got swept at home by the Angels. But all of those things can be true. And can they then answer the question, can you win or lose your season? Can you miss the playoffs in April?
Yeah.
You know, I think the answer is yes, to be honest with you.
I would certainly agree with that.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing to see. I'm happy to see it as a Brewers fan. I wish we could take a little bit more advantage of it. It's interesting that Pittsburgh has found a way to still be in first after completely giving away almost everything over the last 10 days, which has been pretty interesting to see. But again, the complete ineptitude of the NL Central in general, we knew it was the worst division in baseball coming into this, but it's just very readily proving us all very right. And there's that.
So now getting to the NL East, Bryce Harper is back 160 days. After Tommy John surgery. That was interesting.
Wait, one more time, 160, you said, right?
160 days.
Yeah. Bonkers. Medical
there was a phenomenon. Hysterical stat that I saw that since Harper had Tommy John surgery, the White Sox have not won more than 2 games in a row.
Wow. That's a scary stat.
Really bad.
Is that more scary for the Sox or more impressive for Harper?
I think it's all impressive if you ask me. Harper in his 5 games he's played, he's picked up where he's left off from the NLCS.
Oh, right.
The World Series, 7 hits, home run, driven in a run better. Like he's looked good.
Did I see that 5 stolen bases? Did I see that right?
No, he does not.
No, okay.
No.
No.
He's got five strikeouts.
Sorry. So I saw the S. All right. Yeah. Because it was like, why would he be stealing the bases already? Like,
yeah. No, he's not stealing.
It's a good thing I asked instead of stating it as fact.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bryce, steal some more bases.
Unfortunately, the Phillies lost a good five in a row. Actually, six in a row if you go back to the game they lost last Sunday to the Rockies. Bullpen and starting pitching completely fell apart against the Red Sox and especially the Dodgers. I thought I was going to feel better when Harper came back. I feel bad about this team, especially with how close the NL is this year early on. Like, again, it's May. The Phillies could turn it around, but part of me doesn't think that'll happen. 2 years in a row with them starting like 22 and 27 or whatever. I mean, they're currently 15 and 19, I believe is what I saw. Let me double check that. Are you sure? Yes, 15 and 19 currently. I don't know. I don't know. Like, the bullpen fell apart. Craig Kimbrell should have just been left in Los Angeles. That would have made me happy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree. Well, good news for you is 16 at-bats is no amount of time frame to really find out whether or not if Bryce Harper is going to be the catalyst or the jolt in the arm that the Phillies need to turn.
My narrative says he is. I am sticking with my narrative that MV3 will do it. But, you know, the Braves are so good right now. Like,
And they got so much better in the offseason. It's like,
But they didn't even really do much in the offseason. Like,
well,
yeah, they brought in some they brought in Joe Jimenez and Sean Murphy, but like,
right. I guess the Sean Murphy is
Sean Murphy is a big deal. Like, he is paying dividends for the team. And the Phillies just look bad. So, like I said, I'm all in on the Rays if the Phillies miss the postseason. I'm all in on Tampa. That's the team I'm gonna satchel my wagon to.
Let's go. I'm satcheling it right there with you.
They just look bad. They look lost.
Yeah,
please have left Craig in L.A. I don't want to see Craig again.
Yeah, my Brewers are injured more than anything else. Like, they lost their starting center fielder, you know, Garrett Mitchell to year-end shoulder surgery, which he's really one of the early sparks of the offense. And all of our rookies that were playing really well in the first couple weeks have, you know, regressed back to the norm. And, you know, we're going to be up there in the top of the division, but that's just because, like we talked about, the rest of the division's all terrible. So,
yeah. And we'll now getting in.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Finish her up.
Yeah. Just the final highlight of the week. Ronald Acuna Jr. hit a 448-foot blast at Citi Field that went into the third deck. He's back, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Acuna is back.
So that clip was so great because the guy who got the home run just looked around. He's like, what am I doing with this home run ball now?
So good to see. Like, as someone that, like, putting aside my Phillies fandom, as someone that just appreciates baseball, Ronald Acuna Jr. being good is great for baseball.
God, he's fantastic. So much fun to watch. Just a blast.
He's such a blast. Like, dude's going to try and go for a 40-40 season this year, and I think he can do it. I think he's going to do it. He's definitely going to be MVP this year.
Let's go. I'm jumping on that boat, too.
So that is all for the news in this week's highlights. We're going to kick it over to myself as I'm joined by Corey and Frack for our eulogy to the Oakland A's. All right, everyone, welcome into a very somber segment for a good portion of baseball fans, particularly those who are fans of the Oakland variety. Today, we're holding a eulogy for the Oakland Athletics. I will be your sermon for this eulogy, and I am joined by two different A's fans today. We have one who lives in the Bay Area and one who is outside of the Bay Area. So we're going to have two different perspectives on this as far as fandom, which is going to be pretty interesting. First, I am joined here by Corey. Corey, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Awesome. And I am also joined by Frack. Frack, how are you doing today, buddy?
It's been all right. It's been an all right day. Thank you.
It's been a kind of wild few weeks for you guys as Oakland A's fans. I too have a soft spot for the A's simply because of the Philadelphia ties that they have when they were the Philadelphia Athletics.
The best sports franchise in your city.
They actually are. They are the most winningest franchise in Philadelphia history.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, because the Phillies have two. The Flyers have two. I think the Sixers only have one, and the Eagles have one. So it would be the Philadelphia Athletics. So a bit of a wild few weeks for the A's. Fans, were trying to do this like reverse protest where they'd actually sell out a game to try and convince MLB that, hey, it's not the fans that are the problem, it's the owners that are the problem. There was everything with the Howard Terminal going on, but then it came out that the A's would be moving to Las Vegas. Now, this is the fourth time in franchise history, I believe, that they've moved. First, they went from Philly to Kansas City, and Kansas City to Oakland, and now Oakland to Vegas.
Yeah, so third move, but fourth location.
Fourth location, yeah. That's what I meant. So both of you are pretty big A's fans, but from different locations. So I'm going to start with you, Frack, since you are outside of the Bay Area. You're further down south, way further down south. For you, what's it like seeing the A's leave Oakland?
Sure. So, I should say I have no real connections to Oakland, or for that matter, Las Vegas. No family, no personal connections. But I'm still sad. Like, really sad. Like, not like a death in the family sad, but like every once in a while you're doing something else. You're not thinking anything like anything to do with baseball. And then all of a sudden, oh, crap. The A's are probably going to leave. And I say probably only with a dose of denial, not exactly with facts. More denial than facts. I think it's like 80-20. But, I've been telling people I'm expecting them to go because that's the worst possible outcome. But yes, so sad. Sad in general. I mean,
to be fair, though, the 80-20 denial facts, that's also just how we operate as A's fans in general, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, no, these guys are definitely not going to get traded in 3 years when they hit arbitration. No, they're definitely going to extend this guy for sure.
And then they extend that guy and it's Chris Davis for $30 million, and it absolutely falls apart. So,
and then they have to salary dump him with Jonah Heim, and yeah,
for anyone who can play shortstop, like the worst shortstop. Yes, so it's been somber, I suppose. Definitely not the end of me following the A's, but I don't blame anyone else for thinking differently, because like I said, Oakland, Las Vegas, the identity of the team is kind of going to be, I don't want to say gentrified, it's definitely going to be glossed over wherever they move. Like, they're playing in the Coliseum right now, and
yeah,
certain circumstances have created some very fun teams. That's going to change no matter what. Kind of a bummer. It's kind of a good thing, because then maybe you're not throwing money at Chris Davis and no one else. But at the same time, you're losing an era. You're losing the closest thing to the Brooklyn Dodgers since the 50s. If that makes sense. And you can say, oh, well, the Dodgers won way more pennants. Well, there were less teams, so whatever. let me have this. The unique, weird, funky, the national media is going to overlook them no matter what type of thing. Right.
And
that, like, for fans, and
you might just say that Frack is being look at us A's fans, we're so special and unique with our teams. But we've seen what happened to the Raiders fan base after the move, and the Warriors fan base after the move. They obviously still have a lot of fans, but if you actually go to those games at Chase Center and at Allegiant Stadium, the atmosphere is like 100% different than they were in Oakland.
Everyone,
and, like, it's a noticeable change, and that's definitely going to happen with the A's too.
Everyone wants, every MLB team wants a battery situation, like Atlanta has the battery that glossy, maybe nausea-inducing for me, but it's definitely making money. Strip mall, basically, and shops and places to eat, and blah blah blah, surrounding the ballpark. Every owner wants that. Every team wants that. I don't think, as much as I don't like it, I don't think Major League Baseball should stand in the way of getting every team one of those things, even if I am perfectly fine with cheap beer and an ugly parking lot. But that's not, I mean, I'm not the normal baseball consumer, and so I understand the crappy capitalist mantra behind that. And I don't know how you would describe the Coliseum atmosphere right now, Corey, but I can't think that it's the same as maybe a nicer stadium.
Yeah. So Corey, you know, being as someone who lives in the Bay Area, like for you, like what's the overall vibe right now with the A's leaving and how are the fans there feeling? Like, what are you hearing and feeling there?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, unlike Frack, I grew up in the East Bay. The first gift I ever received when I was born was a pair of A's socks from my mom's coworker. It's like grew up going to games for like, you know, summer camp. They take us to a baseball game and birthday parties and, you know, all these events. We just go to A's games because you could get a group of kids in there for like $2 a pop on Wednesdays. You know, it's like it's a great cheap place to take a bunch of people. And that remained true probably until like now, even like the tickets have gone up a little more, but it's still, you know, cheapest alcohol in the Bay Area, you know, at a sports stadium. If you want to move around your seat, like you buy the nosebleeds and you move down, that's always, the security's not going to stop you. So it always has been the cheap place to watch a game, which makes it very accessible. It's even for casual fans, you know, like I would be able to bring people, you know, who had no interest in baseball and just like, they'd be down to watch a game because it wouldn't cost them that much. And you could just chat for a couple hours and drink a beer. So that was my background. Like I definitely, you know, a local A's fan. I say was because I think I'm officially no longer an A's fan, which feels weird to say.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
Even if they stay. Sorry, go ahead.
I didn't want to throw you under the bus.
it's like, it doesn't feel right to continue to be an A's fan, which is a really terrible feeling, you know, because that's pretty much all I've known in terms of baseball. Like I've always been a baseball fan in general, but the A's are my team. And now I don't really like have a team. Like even if they stay, just, I think this whole, you know, backdoor Vegas land deal in the midst of, you know, the talks with the city of Oakland to the point where like the Oakland's mayor had no idea that this was happening. Just like total disregard for the city and like a backtracking of the last, you know, 6 years of PR work that Dave Cavill has been doing as the A's president. It's enough to make me say like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I'm not currently not an A's fan. But and like the atmosphere, like I have been hearing that from some other people. There are a lot of people that are still like, you know, just more bereft. Like they're definitely still A's fans and this is like really painful news for them. I've been able to just like, you know, cut the nerve and tune it out kind of thing. But for example, a buddy of mine, he works for the A's and is also a huge A's fan. And he's just having a hard time because he has to still go to work and do his job. But like, he's been telling me all about the atmosphere, the game day atmosphere. And it's just sounds miserable. Because even like the employees at the stadium, it's like, oh, so we're going to be losing our jobs in the next 5 years too. That's great. So like nobody's like putting in effort anymore. Yeah. Like just the fans are going because they, you know, they have season tickets or they already had these tickets. So they're like showing up, but it's nobody's having a good time.
It's disgusting to me that like how ownership went about this. It reminds me a lot of when the Cleveland Browns were packed up overnight and moved to Baltimore. It feels like that sort of scenario, you know, different sport, but kind of same scenario in a way. It's just, they put out the press release literally in the middle of the night. It's just right. Disgusting on the ownership. Cause I thought the Howard Terminal project was very feasible.
And it is. I definitely think that not only is it feasible, it's definitely more profitable for.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
So if it's greed based, if it's all greed based, which you would assume.
Oh, 100% feels greed based.
Then you would definitely say Howard Terminal is the better money making scheme for Oakland, for the A's, for Mob
Ring. Major League Baseball.
Yeah. For everyone. I mean, like,
the whole thing with people trying to compare the Raiders to the A's, the move there, the Raiders play 8-9 home games a year,
yep.
Right? Mostly on weekends. And so if you're in a tourist town like Vegas, you could pretty easily sell those games out. The A's are going to play 81 home games every day of the week, including weekdays and matinees. There's no shot you're going to be selling out every game like the way that other major market teams do for all their home games. And it's like, it's not going to make as much money.
No matter what, no matter what, they're going to have the smallest stadium in the league. And
100%.
You're seeing a trend in all sports, especially baseball, for owners saying, well, if we're not going to get, we're going to jack up the prices for the live experience so that rich people are going to these games. It's a hollowed out Chase Center, whatever the Warriors play in. I don't know. A hollowed out experience that makes a lot of money off rich people. So if you're moving toward that model and seen it in Atlanta, seen it in Texas, if you're moving toward that model, I think expanding to Las Vegas makes sense. Even if, again, I don't buy that locals can, there are enough locals to support that team in a media market the size of Cincinnati. I just don't.
But that model is still different, though, like for baseball as opposed to basketball or football. Just the sheer number of games makes it so like, you know, splurging on a luxury box for one football game a season is like a totally different thing than getting like the luxury box for, you know, three home stands at a baseball for a baseball season. Like it's a huge difference in price. And so like, even if you're going for that, like bespoke luxury experience, I still think that not, you know, you're not going to get as many people as you would on an average basis.
And not only that, but the site they picked isn't on the strip.
Right, it's outside. It's like in the desert or whatever. It's like,
well, it's all in the desert.
It's all in the desert, but my thoughts on this, it's just like, you're not going to even have a real fan base there. You're going to have all these rich people who are fans of other teams showing up here. And like, you know, maybe you'll have like a hardcore fan base there, a small one, but the experience that you would get from like, say, Philadelphia or, you know, Los Angeles, you know, those teams is going to be very different to what you get in Vegas, because it's going to be a conglomerate of different people because it's such a tourist town.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's going to be a lot of visiting fans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure is the case with the Florida teams. And while I would say the Marlins have a super fan base, kind of at the same time, they're a perfect example of a team that, we're kind of bouncing around topics here, they built their stadium in the wrong place. And when they don't have a good team, their crowds look almost as bad as the A's crowds.
Well, I mean, even the Tampa Bay Rays have a great team, and they built their stadium in the wrong place, and no one shows up.
Yeah, that's an extreme example.
Yeah. Anyways.
And they built that stadium to get the Giants.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's a whole other thing. It's just the touching on like the league's involvement in this whole thing is like, it's so unequitable, you know, because like when the Giants were looking for a place, you had like the league, you know, pretty much fighting against the relocation. You had the A's saying like, I will cede land rights, and you had like, obviously the fan base was against it, but then, you know, here with the A's, it's been clear for 20 years that they really just only want one major league team in the Bay Area, and the league is totally in favor of whatever measures it takes to get the A's out of Oakland.
And yet not speeding the situation along. I think that's the thing. Like in 2016, just to explain it, although I'm sure everyone knows, in 2016, the San Jose Dream formally died. I think that was a market that maybe the league was palatable, but they weren't going to take away media rights from one team and give it to another team because that's socialism or whatever. Obviously it's not, but whatever, that's what they think. And I think when that died, for the next 6-7 years to be an Oakland odyssey and to wind up at a dead end just means that the 18, 19, 20, 21-ish teams were wasted. Like,
right,
you built a wasted contention cycle, which it was fun. Not as fun as the last one, but it was still the weird, funky A's baseball where nothing you expected to happen happens and everything you didn't expect suddenly comes true.
Yeah. Wait, sorry, you didn't expect Liam Hendricks to be the best pitcher in baseball?
Oh, you mean the DFA starter who can't throw 94?
Yeah, that guy.
I do wonder, to go off of that, you know, what would be different? Like, say the A's had kind of the run that the Giants had where they won 3 World Series in that 6-year span. Had the A's done that, would we be seeing what's going on here? You know, I wonder how much, you know, maybe that played into the Giants' success with the A's, you know, MLB essentially trying to push the A's. Well, not trying, they're pushing the A's out of Oakland.
That's a tough one. I don't know if you can really draw a comparison that means anything, because the Giants got their new stadium. You know, they got their new stadium in the turn of the century, and they had Barry Bonds. Yep. And they had the 2002 pennant. So it's like, even though there was that period of, like, you know, 2006 to 2010 where they were terrible until they won the World Series, that's a short time span, and they were still in a new stadium with like, you know, up until 2007, they still had Bonds, you know? So like, they were still kind of, they had a draw, which is like the A's, you know, the A's can sell well if they've been good for 3 straight years, but they didn't have the new stadium. They didn't really have that long time star player when they're going into their World Series run, or if they were going into a World Series run.
The windows are shorter. Things have to be more fluid. The windows are shorter. And in 1977, the A's tried to move to Denver. And so for like 30 of the 50 years the A's have been in Oakland, they've been flirting with moving or trying to build somewhere else, even if you want to call moving from the Coliseum complex to Howard Terminal, which isn't that far. But I mean, that's the site that they decided is this is the one viable location to build the Battery, because there already is a Battery of sorts at Jack London, which makes perfect sense. But there's not, I mean, it's, they've always been the better team.
Now I want to call this out. I don't know, Frack, if you've seen this. I was talking with Corey about this a little bit ago, before we start recording. MLB, you know, fans have been showing up to A's games with liar and fraud signs calling out the owner, and MLB has been censoring those in all highlights. You know, it's very clear that, you know, MLB is very complicit in all this.
This is their nightmare situation in a way. I think, like, with the Senators moving, that was tragic.
Yeah.
Defined by Brooklyn, that was tragic. And so they've avoided doing this for a reason, because it makes them look like terrible.
Yeah.
Makes them look terrible. And so now all of a sudden it's come to pass, we think.
I mean, I do have an inside source that is telling me that the general vibe in the, like, for A's employees is that Vegas is far from a done deal. They have the, beyond the agreement to buy the land, there's no like legal work that's been done to build the stadium or anything like that. So it's absolutely not a sure thing, which just makes the whole situation all the more baffling to me, because I'm pretty sure the A's lease in the Coliseum is up after the 24 season, after the 25 season,
24, which means, I think.
24, which means they have a season and a half to find a place to play, because after how this has all gone down, I don't see a world where the Oakland, like, leadership says, yeah, definitely, we'll extend the lease a couple more years, take as long as you need.
So, no, like, they're going to tell them to leave.
As they should.
Because ownership is, you know, screwing over the city of Oakland, screwing over the fan base here.
There's so much incompetence. So much incompetence in basically every level that I wonder if the intent wasn't as bad, and it's just stupid people making stupid decisions, mm-hmm. to the point that with the lease running up, I think it's also complicated because the A's own part of that lease.
Ooh. That's right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. They bought it as like a fail-safe to flip the land so they could get the money.
Yeah, they bought out stadium. Like the County of Alameda's share or something like that, I believe.
The County of Alameda's role in this is they got duped in the 90s to refit the Coliseum for the Raiders. Right. And then the Raiders were like, eh, we'll go somewhere else. And so the county has been saying, like, we're not getting screwed over again. So the city of Oakland doesn't have the money to fix the transportation issues that would needed to build. It's like $500 million, I think. And Oakland can only come up with three. And this Alameda was asked for the other part, and I don't know where that ended. I think it just ended with them tabling the motion. But it was, I followed this very closely, of course, because you're anxious about where your favorite team is going to play. But it is Byzantine and just nonsensical levels of incompetence here to the point that
incompetence and bureaucracy, which is like, yes. I do in general think it's good to do these environmental impact reports and, you know, make sure that where your building is going to be okay in the long run. And we know it works, right? We've seen how many stadiums built in the 21st century in the Bay Area? Like three. Right. And and two of those are in the last, like maybe like 5, 6, 10 years, right? Like pretty recent. And then in California, you know, we also have LA, all those LA stadiums that were built. And like, we know the, you know, Golden One Center in Sacramento, we know the process can work in California. And so like, there is something to be said for the incompetence angle, because it's truly just been nonstop. And the weirdest part too, is like Dave Cavill came to us from the Earthquakes after having completed the new Earthquake Stadium in San Jose. And so it's like, we know he was able to get that done too. That's evidence for the malicious element, where it's like, he just didn't want to get it done here.
Yeah. Cave Davil has always been a nefarious figure up until 2021, when people were singing his praises for doing some really, he didn't do it, other people in the organization did it, forward thinking stuff to try and get everything out of that attendance in the Coliseum that you could with A's access. And that was cool.
That was before A's 2020, access. Right?
Yes.
So that was the season ticket model, where because after Mount Davis was put into the Coliseum, there was a row of seats right above the outfield wall in right and left field, mm-hmm. which are quote unquote the bleachers, which were the bleachers used to be. And then behind those, stretching the entire length of the outfield, there's more general admission seats that are below the suites. So this is like from top down, it's like Mount Davis seating, suites, general admission seats, and then the bleachers, and then the field. Mm-hmm. A's Access was the season ticket model, where you paid, I think, $20 a month. And you basically got to sit in those general admission seats in the outfield.
Oh, that's awesome.
You walk into the stadium with your badge. You can't really, you know, can't sit wherever you want in the stadium, but you can sit anywhere you want in that section. There's the treehouse, which is like that bar with the bar games and like the screen TV screens. And there's like a DJ doing, you know, live music on the weekends. And like, you can be in that whole area. And then you also get half off drinks and food in the stadium. So like, I had that in 2019, and I could just like decide to go to a game, park in the BART lot across the street for free, walk into the stadium for free, get a $5 beer, and just like enjoy the game. And that was awesome. That was like an incredible experience as a fan.
And I was jealous that I never did that, of course, and watching it from 1500 miles away, I thought that attendance would be better than like 24th out of 30. Of all the teams, because that is the coolest deal, and it's not something that the owners should be doing. That model should be.
So the Phillies had something similar to that. They did it in the spring. So it was only for weekday games. They didn't give you weekend games, but it's like $40 for the month, and you'd get a ticket pretty much anywhere in the stadium. It'd be a random seat in the stadium. So like one night you could be in, you know, the 300 level, another night you could be behind home plate. But it was basically a random seat you'd get, $40 a month, and you could go to all these games. And well, that's how I got to see a lot of Phillies games the year they signed Harper, because they had that. So that's how I was getting to every game that year. I do would love to see more teams do that, just because it's a cool model. And, you know, there definitely is a bit of an attendance issue in baseball overall. I think that would help, you know, attendance overall.
I would describe, and maybe Corey, you can disagree with this, as you being the expert among us, I would say the Coliseum site is antiquated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, I love going to games at the Coliseum, but it is a horrible, horrible building.
And not only the building.
It's a stone concrete donut. Without Mount Davis, I wasn't conscious for the pre-Mount Davis era, but like seeing game footage and pictures, like it looks like a genuinely wonderful place to see a baseball game.
It looks like Kauffman Stadium.
Right. Yeah, actually pretty similar. But you get it's not like flat Kansas in the background. You actually have the East Bay Hills are, in view of the center field there. So you get kind of like Dodger Stadium almost, where you have like the mountains in the background, right? You have like some kind of geography in center field, which is a nice addition. Post Mount Davis, it's a concrete donut. It's cold. It's windy. There's just cracking concrete everywhere. The second level overhangs way too far over the first level. And so like in a day game, you're baking in the sun, but freezing in the shade. If you're going to pee, you're peeing in a trough for the most part. The concourse is very narrow, which means when it does fill up and sell out, it's going to take you 40 minutes to get us concessions. It's not well thought out.
And
not
reminds me of old Veterans Stadium, which was the Phillies and the Eagles shared a stadium. This was back in the day where they had the multi-purpose stadiums.
Right. So, I mean, Philly, part of it is because it's a multi-purpose stadium.
So I've always, as an outsider, I've always found like the vibe of the Coliseum like to be cool, because it reminds me of Veterans Stadium. Like, yeah, it's a piece of crap, but it's our piece of crap. Like, that's how we felt about Veterans Stadium.
I mean, I want to be clear, like this is specifically about the facilities of the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Like the game day experience is great. Especially like whenever I had season tickets, it was in the right field bleachers with all the people that are waving the flags and banging the drums. Like, that is just such a great place to watch a baseball game from. Because you just get to every A's player had their customized drum beat. You got to heckle the right fielder, you got to chant whenever the A's scored a run. Like, it was a good time. And, there's the left field bleachers, which is a pretty similar idea. If you're sitting along the baselines, you're like, because there's the on-field bullpens, you're just very close to the action when people are warming up. It is like, as far as like watching a game, it's awesome. But like being in the Coliseum is a bad time, if that makes sense.
And even getting to the Coliseum, I think, like my memory was just walking back on the BART bridge to the only station, and the area is that I would say there's more food marts than grocery stores in the area, which is a structural racism problem. But
yeah, that part of West Oakland is heavily industrial, and like even though there are residents in that area, it's a desert in terms of like things to do.
And it would be tricky. I know that a lot of the discourse, at least in the media has been just build at the Coliseum, just build your brand new stadium at the Coliseum, and shit, I'd rather them do that than nothing. But at the same time, I don't know how viable that would be when your team is bad, to have a random development for rich people, not rich people, but wealthier people in an industrial West Oakland place.
One of the whole benefits of the Howard Terminal thing is like, because the A's still owned that land, they were just going to do mixed use development on that land and not have to worry about building a ballpark there, which is like, that is a good way to kind of help that area come along. It's because you're not just building fancy condos, you're also building like, restaurants and fast food chains and grocery stores and like all these things that were missing from that area, and on this huge plot of land that is very accessible by car, which is like, that's the one thing the Coliseum has for it. It's the right next thing to a major freeway.
Mm-hmm. That is the one big thing.
Yeah. And the parking lot is very big as well. you know, and yeah, like if you are, you know, if you're close to a BART line, there's a BART stop there, right? But like BART, it's not a major metropolitan subway. It only goes until 11:30 midnight.
Because you'd always hear about games going into extras when they started at 10:05 Eastern. And like whenever the BART would stop, you'd hear the announcer say, well, it's empty now. Like, I don't know if you went to one of those games.
I mean, the PA announcers will actually say, if you go to a game, it's like the last BART trains leave in 30 minutes. If you're going to go now. Which is like, what are we doing here? Just like,
that's insane to me to think about, because, you know, I was at an 18 inning Phillies game. I think it was like 18 innings, whatever game Wilson Valdez got the win as a pitcher. I remember because Roy Oswalt came in left field. Wilson Valdez got the win as a pitcher, but the Broad Street line, they held trains for the Broad Street line so people could still get home, even though it was 3 a.m.
Right, which is like what a normal functioning transit system would do.
Right.
BART is not that. As much as I love BART and have a lot of memories on BART, it is a bad subway system. Because it's a commuter train, really. And like it needs to be expanded into being an actual just public transit option. But right now it really isn't a very good one.
There wouldn't even be a stop at this hypothetical Howard terminal.
Right.
So you would have to build the pedestrian bridge to go over a railroad track.
Oh my gosh. Which is fine.
And I liked the gondola idea personally.
I think they were the gondola
idea looked cool.
And the boats. I remember when in 2021, when they were getting the unofficial yes from the city council, there was trepidation from some city council members until they all started tweeting like, well, if the A's are going to pay for a ferry system or pay money for a ferry system, that's going to help poor people in this neighborhood get grocery store access. Mm. Because right now they're backed off closer to just the port of Oakland and a downtown that's been blocked by highways. Again, structural racism, but the ferry system would help. And then the city council members, one in particular, started saying, oh, I'm going to vote for this. And the city council at the time was like, 8 people voted yes. One person was obviously funded by the port who didn't want anyone to be cleaning up their toxic wasteland. And then one person was just a no, like a present vote, because they just didn't want to vote for anything development wise, which is fair. Their constituents had no skin in the game, so why vote? Right. But 8-1, 1-1, like that, I felt like that was the ultimate validation that even though the city council and the A's had bungled a lot of things, the A's more than the city council, but that was like, okay, this odd couple is actually going to figure it out. And when people were still saying, oh, well, they're going to make the team bad because they're moving to Vegas, I saw it as the team is bad for incompetence reasons, but also because they're trying to get a stadium open in 2027.
Mm. And they're aiming for that as their window. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I do want to kind of just reiterate that. Like, there's a lot to be said about tanking and you know, for when the new stadium opens, but I do also think that the A's are just a badly run organization in terms of player talent, development, scouting, drafting. Like we get the occasional hit, and we get the occasional like Rule 5 guy who's like really good, and the occasional draft pick who pans out. But like, I'm trying to think of the post 2015 draft pick that's contributed the most at the major league level, and I believe it's AJ Puck, who is now a Miami Marlin.
I think it's Sean Murphy.
Well, was he 2016?
I think he was 16.
Okay, then it is Sean Murphy. Yeah, okay. But then there's a large gap between Atlanta him Brave, and AJ Puck. Right, the draft, also that. Yeah, Sean Murphy's an Atlanta Brave.
Every team has their draft failures that you could name and be like, oh my God, this is terrible. It seems like there was a period there where the A's just weren't drafting. But in the 17, 18, 19 years, you saw their team war from players that they drafted go way up.
Yeah.
And it was all of a sudden like, oh, hey, the team that really survives off the seconds of other teams and seeing, like taking a chance on a guy because their pitching numbers look bad, but maybe you see something, I don't know. that team started to pivot slightly, not for pitchers. I don't think the only pitcher they've drafted who is universally described as good is Sonny Gray this decade. That's bad. They don't draft pitchers. Which, whenever they do draft a pitcher early, you roll your eyes because it's like, this isn't, what do you think you're doing here? It's the Coliseum. Pitchers succeed there who don't succeed anywhere else.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of just general in this latest window. I think you saw the team, well, 2020, that number went down because the Mets sucked or injured or sucked. But that 2021 team was starting to age quickly. And it was still one last run and it was going to be fun. And I was excited in that late 2021 era with Marte and Olsen, even if the team had four relievers, three of them decided to suck, and then the other one got his spider tack taken away on this side of his neck. So the reliever sucked. The ERA was 7. It was Marte and Olsen being exciting, but it was still collapse of a sort.
Yeah.
That was when the attendance problems went from bad to tragic. The team was still good. I mean, they almost went to the playoffs, but I wonder if that was when ownership in their grand stupidity said, screw it. If we can't have a winning team draw anything, we're going to strip to the suds because we can get 500 fans in here if Starling Marte is in center field, or if, I don't know, give me a good one, Mark Canna, Seth Brown. What's a center fielder that makes you think? Makes you grimace.
Craig Gentry.
Perfect one.
Oh no, not Craig Gentry. But yeah,
you get to watch Craig Gentry play center field until he runs into the wall, gets a concussion, and is out for 60 games.
Oh my goodness.
That's the truest Craig Gentry experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do think that's an interesting thing of like pinpointing exactly when the ownership was like decided to bail. I don't necessarily think, I don't know if I agree with it though, because it's not like they were not running a good baseball experience even when they were winning in 2021. No. As you said, it was like there were players that were good, but a lot of players were overperforming or just getting lucky. And like, for example, like Jesus Luzardo, this like 23-year-old lefty who throws 97, and you're going to strip him off for a half season of like a 32-year-old.
See, that made no sense to me
fielder.
Because Luzardo is so good in Miami now.
He was, and he was good for brief stretches in Oakland too. It's just, he just never put together a full season because he was very young.
Yeah.
And then give him a shot. So like, as a fan, when I heard about that trade, I was outraged, and it made me like, not mentally check out for the season, but it made me like enjoy the product that I was seeing less because I just knew it was going to be a bad trade. And then, guess what? It's a bad trade. And we missed the playoffs anyway. So
I definitely would say from a value standpoint, it sucked. And value-based trades are all the rage, or basing things by value, since Tatis at least. From a live-in-the-moment, nothing else matters but what I'm looking right in front of me mode, I loved that Marte trade because I got entertainment out of it, more entertainment than I would have.
I definitely I'm not against the last-ditch trade to go all in. For example, to this day, I still am firmly in favor of the Cespedes trade at the deadline in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
Like, our pitching was terrible, and, like, nobody could have predicted that every single hitter was going to suck down the stretch. And so, like, John Lester, we don't make it to the wild card game if we don't have John Lester at the front of the rotation in the second half. I'm not against the all-in trade, but I just think, like, even with the knowledge, the insider knowledge they had of Ramon Laureano, getting busted for PEDs, there's a different trade that could have been made that did not require you to give up Jesus Luzardo.
And no one wants to trade prospects anymore, which is another thing that made everyone else go, well, what's going on over there? But I think that the people have been saying that for 20 years, and maybe this is one of the first times where it was like, well, from a value-based standpoint, yeah, there's no reason for it.
Well, what about Donaldson?
The $100 million mistake. Yes.
I mean, I think that's worse than Luzardo for Marte.
Oh, yeah.
At least Marte, like you said, was fun to watch. Nobody came over in the Donaldson trade was fun to watch ever.
And I can't believe this. I was looking this up the other day. Franklin Barreto was a number 23 overall in MLB pipeline prospect.
He was the bluest blue chip when he was with the Blue Jays. Yeah. And then like, I Sean Nolan recently pitched for, who was it? The Nationals this year?
Miami?
Yeah, it was the Marlins.
Yeah.
Like I saw his name in the box score. I was like, Sean Nolan? Really?
Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Poor guy.
Going off this, you know, what are your guys' views on what you think the team's going to look like in Vegas? Do you think they're going to do the scummy thing and start spending money there now that they got what they need there? You know, where do you guys, how do you think the team's going to function in Vegas from a baseball standpoint?
I don't want to jump in on Corey's thing because his thing. They'll be mid-tier when they're winning and bottom eight when they're losing. I think that's safe to say whether it's in Oakland or Las Vegas, but maybe they're more times bottom eight in Las Vegas. I can see them with a little bit more money going. I would say their track record for free agents is atrocious. But at a certain, the A's, at least the last several years, but at a certain point you're wondering, is your free agent track record atrocious because of incompetence? It's obviously a part. Or is it atrocious because you don't have any money to spend and you're throwing, and when you do pick a player to throw money at, it's an old reliever who's has save situation history, but just, I don't know, absolutely fails. Like,
who also has anxiety.
Oh, poor guy.
I feel bad.
Yeah, but Familia doesn't have anxiety and he just blew a save.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Well, that's all he does. Also, that's all he knows how to do.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, though, Jurys Familia was a minor league free agent signing. We did not give him multi-million dollar deal in the offseason. That's a
good point. That is a good point.
And I'm not like, again, I don't want to be clear. I'm not mad at Trevor May for not being good. Like, whatever. He's got to deal with his own stuff. I understand that. But it does stem from the fact that, like, we're barely giving out money. And, yeah, we're also talking about, like, another Trevor Rosenthal. Gave him a $10 million deal. Did not pitch a single game for the A's that year.
I'm not convinced he's alive. He's done this to three teams now. I don't think he's real.
he's a money laundering scheme for teams.
Just tell me when he's on a major league mound, and I will tell you, yeah, the A's spent $10 million on that guy.
Yeah, no, that's an AI deep fake. That's not actually Trevor Rosenthal pitching.
Yeah. He fails the capture test.
Going back to the if they spend in Las Vegas, I kind of agree. I don't think they're going to become like, you know, the Yankees or the Dodgers or anything, the Red Sox. Like, they might be, they're definitely going to spend more money than they are in Oakland, especially if the contention window lines up with the opening of the new stadium. I think they're going to do a pretty good job of like maybe even getting like top 15, you know, like top half of payroll. But I do think if it's going to be bad, it's going to be bad, you know, like when they have a bad team, they're going to spend less than the Rays, you know.
Yeah, like Cincinnati, other Midwest media markets where they hold their fan base captive because you're not going to live in Pittsburgh and grow up rooting for the Reds. Because of that, the Midwest teams, I feel like, run this terrible baseball operation where they all kind of suck. Because you're not going to, what are you going to do, go be a Reds fan? Like, no, you live in Pittsburgh. You're a Pirates fan. You're going to watch the 110 loss Pirates for the next 10 years.
But they might come off to a hot start in 2023. You never know. So stick around.
The beauty of baseball. I do wonder if you throw a couple million more dollars at that 2019 team and you probably have to give up less prospects. Poorer teams do this where they have to trade their draft capital at the deadline because they can't just go outbid the Dodgers on a closer in December. Right. So you wind up trading your prospects for the Jonah Heim nonsensical deal is definitely a part of that. Lizardo is to an extent, but that was also weird. But you have to trade your draft prospects. The Dustin Harris for Mike Minor deal. Just no one in their right mind should do that unless you really need a Mike Minor down the stretch, which is kind of sad.
No one has ever needed a Mike Minor down the stretch.
Exactly. But if you need a warm body because you don't have any depth, and that's the thing, the A's teams, whenever they start, whenever they're good, and they start to lose that contention window, they always have the worst depth possible. And I think that's going to be the case in Las Vegas, no matter what. They're going to have bad depth.
Very fair. So we're going to start to wrap this up. Just a few more things to go through here. Obviously, with the A's leaving Oakland, Oakland doesn't have a team now. You know, the San Francisco market basically controls, you know, everything there. You know, they control football, they control basketball, they control baseball. I think the only thing they don't control is hockey because you got the San Jose Sharks. But I don't think we're ever going to see a team in Oakland again. Do you guys ever think we'll see a team in Oakland again?
Like a baseball team or
any sport?
Well, we do have the Oakland Roots. I want to put a shout out to the Oakland Roots. It's independent club soccer. Mm-hmm. We also, the Bay Area is getting a women's soccer team, and the location of that is yet to be determined. I do think somewhere in Oakland or the East Bay would make the most sense. So that's a possibility. But as far as like men's, you know, basketball, baseball, football,
four,
like probably not.
I think Oakland will, if this does happen, I assume the A's would get out of the Coliseum at the end of this year and go play in the Aviators Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Until they get the new one ready. And if that's the case, I assume a Pecos League team would move in. For viewers who may not know what the Pecos League is, it's basically the last independent league. They have teams in Bakersfield that lost their minor league team because their stadium was old. And cities across the West where you would say, wait, does that place exist? I'm sure the Oakland Oaks would pop back up in the Pecos League.
That'd be fun.
It would be fun. But I don't see anything else.
And the good news is they could keep most of their roster from this year.
Very fair.
Except for Brent Rooker. That guy's going to win MVP and sign a nine-figure deal somewhere.
He's so good. It's like you said his name. I was like, what the heck is that? I had to look him up. I'm like, it's Robbie Grossman all over again.
Can we please stop talking about Robbie Grossman?
Yeah. So just some final things. Let's go on a lighter note. Well, first, you know, Corey, you obviously said you're not going to stay a fan of Oakland. Do you have any team that you have an eye on possibly that you might, or are you just out on baseball?
I mean, you said on a lighter note, but this is just like, I've been thinking about this.
We're going to get into the lighter moments in a moment.
People keep asking me this, and it's like, I don't want to be a fan of another team. I want to be an Oakland Athletics fan.
Yeah.
But they don't seem to want me to be able to do that. So I have not chosen another team yet. I do like somebody said, like, you know, why not just choose the Dodgers? Because it's baseball in easy mode, you know. But I feel like after 30 years of being an A's fan, I do kind of deserve to be a fan on easy mode for a while.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the Dodgers are terrible this year so far. So that's maybe not the best time to jump in. And maybe I should have jumped in at like 2017 or something. But yeah, I mean, the Dodgers are a possibility. The Padres are a ton of fun right now. I mean, come on, they got everything. They got the stadium. They got the packed house. They got the, you know, great team, really fun, energetic team. I love the location of the stadium in addition to it being a nice stadium. So that might be a possibility. I don't see myself being a Giants fan. I mean, I'm not like anti-Giants, like as a concept. I just don't, I've never connected with them on pretty much any level. So
fair. Well, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies bandwagon is always open for visitors. And, you know, Frack, I know you're likely going to stay on with the A's most likely.
Yeah, if they're playing on the dark side of the moon, but they call themselves the Athletics, it will make a difference to me and I will be sad. But if there's another winning team in 2027, I'm still going to be there because
you're going to have to watch the games with like a 10 minute delay or whatever it is.
Yeah. At least 10. We haven't perfected the technology beyond. And because it'd be coming from the other side of the moon.
Well, I assume they have a satellite bouncing the signal back towards Earth.
That's why you make the big bucks.
Wait, you're getting paid for this?
Wow. But yeah, I mean, they'll play in Las Vegas. They're still the A's. Yeah, I don't think that's going to stop me. And then in 50 years, we can do this all over again and they'll move to Tokyo. So
See, you know what? I will tell you this. I will be a Tokyo A's fan. That sounds fun.
It is. Yeah. They just need to cure jet lag and we're all set.
I mean, hey, listen, in 50 years, we're going to be able to transport like Star Trek. So it's fine.
Yes.
All right, then just last, you know, some of your favorite memories of A's baseball over your fandom. Corey, we'll start with you.
I mean, top of the list is 2013 ALDS Game 2. It was the A's and Tigers. Sonny Gray was a rookie that year, and he matched up in Game 2 versus Justin Verlander. And they went like toe-to-toe pitcher's duel, you know, goose eggs for both teams. I think Sonny ended up pitching 8 innings, or actually both pitchers did. And then in the bottom of the 9th, Stephen Vogt walked off for the A's with a little single pat down, you know, through the hole between third base and shortstop. And I was in the third deck and it was a packed house and it was insane. It was so much fun. That's definitely my favorite memory as an Oakland A's fan. There's a bunch of other really good ones, but that's like, you know, S tier 1A, like that's the one.
And who did you say was your favorite A's player?
I mean, I might have to go with Stephen Vogt.
That's a good one.
Partially because of that memory, but also he just, you know, he's just so embodied what it was to be an Oakland Athletic player. Yeah. Just like, here's this catcher from a, you know, a third string school in middle of nowhere, Southern California, who gets, you know, traded to the A's. And because of how the A's operate, he gets a, you know, starting job. And all of a sudden he's an all-star 2 years in a row and a team leader and just like impersonating NBA refs, you know, before the games in the clubhouse. And just like this weird dude who also happened to be just like a pretty good baseball player. And that's Oakland A's baseball.
Nice. Frack, for you, favorite memories and favorite player.
I don't know if one pops out to me in that iconic of a way that Corey so eloquently just said. Definitely top five for me is going to a spring training game with Corey, spring training A's game. It's got to be top five. I think the other ones are just away games that I've been to in different stadiums, mm-hmm. talking to A's fans. Seemingly, who come from all over and who crawled out of the woodwork from all over in St. Louis, Texas, Houston, Kansas City, Pittsburgh. Yeah, all those cities to just talk about the hours for this weird, weird baseball team. And favorite player? I don't know if I have one. I think it's Rajai Davis.
Ooh,
that's a good one. That's a very good one. Another defining A.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely just some good choices.
Different era of A's baseball for Rajai, though.
Oh yeah, the mediocre, the
Bob Guerin A's.
Yeah, the worst manager ever, and a miserably mediocre team, and that's what I grew up on as well. So, I think I don't know if you ask me which one I'd rather do: just go 81-81 in the Coliseum, or go 90 wins, 90 losses. Obviously, I'm going to pick the latter, but 81-81 was, you were never bad, but it always felt like you should be.
Dan Johnson.
I mean, the 5-year Derek Barton experiment, I don't know. Ooh. It was probably 2 years, but it felt like it was 5.
It felt like a lot more than 2. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Derek Barton 2.0 with Ryan Noda, right?
Yes, exactly. Just with slightly worse defense, I think.
Somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Esty Urie has got to be top five favorite A's players.
He is a lot of fun.
At least they've got that going for them.
See, I'd say Coco Crisp was probably my favorite A. You
that, know, when that's I think, another one that's a, that was that's like
a fun one.
I mean, but also like a very like kind of archetypal Oakland Athletic player. Yeah,
definitely very, very Oakland A player.
And as far as like the 2010s era of Oakland A's baseball, that is probably the player that the fans have latched onto the most. I mean, he's the one who like, you know, started the post game pie tradition, yep. Did like the Bernie lean, all these things that like the fans still do at games. So
awesome. Well, hey, we're going to wrap it up here, guys. Thank you for joining for this eulogy to Oakland baseball as the A's are getting ready to move on. Very somber But I appreciate you guys coming on just to, you know, share what's, you know, what you guys are seeing as fans and, you know, what's going on over there. So I thank you guys very much. And we'll kick it over for the outro. Once again, thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it was very therapeutic. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Rain Delay Radio. Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. This week's episode was hosted by myself, Patrick, and Kevin. Kevin, thank you for joining me. As well, our featured guests were Frack and Corey. This week's episode was edited by Naeem. Our theme music is composed by Chuck Leese. Rain Delay Radio releases every Monday at 1 a.m. Thank you for joining us, everyone, and we will see you next week.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Thanks again.